Back in 2015, WWE issued a press release. They were making the announcement that Stone Cold Steve Austin would have a new podcast coming to the WWE Network called the Stone Cold Podcast. And this was years before the Broken Skull Sessions, which you know, he's in the middle of doing right now. He's interviewing a new legend each month. It's a very good series. In that press release back in 2015, 5 years ago, the company revealed some of the names, some of the big names that Austin would be interviewing, got people really excited. Among them were Hulk Hogan, Sting, and The Undertaker. The Undertaker was one of those names that the company had promised. I got very excited because it's extremely rare, right? That you hear The Undertaker, that you see The Undertaker in that kind of interview, in that kind of environment, letting his guard down, in that kind of setting. It's just not something that you get to see very often. And so I was excited. You know, and he and Austin have history. They go back a long ways, have a lot of war stories to share and all that kind of stuff. And I thought back and I said, you know, it's been so long. We really haven't got the chance to see an interview with The Undertaker like that, probably since 2002. You know, before WrestleMania 18, Michael Landsberg had a show called Off the Record up in Canada. And The Undertaker, and this is back when he was, you know, basically the American Badass, Big Evil, that whole phase, sat down with him and gave him a long interview talking about his career, talking about his life, and giving people an insight they hadn't gotten before. So he's been there forever. He's seen it all. You can only imagine the stories that he has to tell. And then it never happened. Then it never happened. Then we had Austin interviewing all kinds of people. He interviewed Vince McMahon and Triple H and Dean Ambrose, and we know how that went. But we never got the interview with The Undertaker. Actually, I'm not sure we got the interview with Hogan or Sting either, now that I think about it. It just never happened. No explanation. It was just never mentioned again. So imagine my surprise when I'm watching WrestleMania this year, and I see an advertisement for this documentary series about The Undertaker, called Undertaker The Last Ride. And they're mentioning Mark Calloway. They're completely killing kayfabe with this guy, letting their guard down. They're showing you, you know, him training and him at home and him driving around giving interviews. And just a side of The Undertaker that you never thought you would see on WWE television, right? I mean, one day when his career is over, maybe there'll be the big shoot interview. You know, I don't know that he'll be sitting down with, you know, High Spots or kayfabe commentary Sean Oliver or anything like that. Although I think Sean Oliver would do a great job on an Undertaker shoot interview. But it's not something I ever expected to see on WWE television. And between the ad for the series and then the Boneyard match with AJ Styles, Undertaker turned out to be the big star for me of WrestleMania this year. And that was something going into WrestleMania this year that I never thought I would say. So there was a lot of excitement about The Undertaker coming out of WrestleMania 36. Now, he did also finally sit down with Steve Austin a few months ago on his Broken Skull Sessions, which was great. If you've not seen it, it's one of those things on the network I tell everybody, please go back and watch it. Just a very detailed, laid-back interview. Kind of funny. You know, he's got some humorous moments when he talks about his debut and thinking he was going to debut as the Eggman, hatching out of the giant egg at Survivor Series and all that kind of, or he was going to be Shower Boy, which I won't get into what that means, but he finally got to sit down with Steve Austin. We learned a lot. You know, he told a lot of stories, and I never thought we would reach a point where he would be that comfortable opening up and talking about the things that he has all of a sudden started to open up about. Now, I know some people don't like that. Some people want to, you know, keep kayfabe until the day they die. Doesn't matter how old you get. If you grew up and you were a little kid watching The Undertaker and now you're in your 30s or your 40s, you know, some people just don't want to let go. Me, I love it. I love the fact that you pull the curtain back and you tell these stories that, from his perspective, we've not had a chance to hear before. I eat that stuff up. I love it. But he was always very protective of the gimmick to the point that he wouldn't even appear on camera at the Hall of Fame ceremonies. He would be in the back, but he would never show up on camera. He just wanted to keep a certain level of protection where it came to his gimmick and where it came to his character, because he had spent his entire career protecting that Undertaker gimmick. Now, of course, he's on Twitter. He's sharing selfies with Post Malone on Instagram. He's opening himself up for all these media interviews. He's popping up on people's Twitch feeds. I mean, he's doing all these things now. And I know he's got a representative, you know, like a marketing and PR rep. He's probably thinking about life after wrestling. That's how I started to first figure, okay, this guy's probably looking to wind things down finally after all these years, because now he's got representation. Remember the whole brouhaha with Vince McMahon where he was going to be StarCast and Vince said, nah, no you're not. And then he got pulled. You know, he's starting to branch out. He's starting to do stuff because he looks at his career and he says, I'm winding down here. I don't have very many matches left. And what's cool about it, and I wanted to mention the Austin interview also for this reason, is that no matter how broken down his body might be, the one thing I noticed from the Austin interview, and even if you watch him here on this special, is how sharp his mind is. He's not that old where his mind should be mush, although he's taken a lot of shots to the head, but I mean in terms of the details and the specific stories and moments and matches that he does remember. You know, I watch and I listen to a lot of interviews with a lot of different wrestling personalities, some who have their own podcast, who I won't name, who when I hear them tell stories, I just think to myself, this guy's completely full of shit. Or they're just honest and they go, I don't remember. No, well you were there for this. What did you think of this? I don't remember. You know, some of these guys have been in wrestling for 25, 30, 35 years. You can't expect them to remember everything. Undertaker remembers a lot. He's got a lot of stories. If he wanted to write a book one day, I think it would be one of the more interesting ones, because he actually remembers a lot of little details. Meeting certain people for the first time, having a match with them. Kurt Angle, he talked about here in the special. So that's one of the cool things I think about Undertaker opening up in this way. This series is made up of 5 episodes. It is a 5-episode miniseries. It just debuted on the network this past Sunday. 1 episode every Sunday through the month of June, taking us through what, at the time, The Undertaker himself believed was going to be his final match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando a few years ago. And it goes right up until the present day. We don't know when it ends officially, but 2017 through 2020. That is the time frame for what is being covered here in this series. I've watched the first episode. I thought it was fantastic. I cannot recommend it enough. I can already tell, we're only 1 episode in, I can already tell this is going to be the greatest documentary or documentary series, I think, that WWE and the network has ever put together. And they put together some gems. They put together a lot of really good documentaries. This is probably going to wind up being the very best that they have ever done. And even if you're not a big Undertaker fan, I think it's very riveting to hear him just let people into a side of his career and his life as a lifer in that company that we've not been exposed to. And you get cameos by all kinds of legends, you know, Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels and Triple H and Ric Flair and, you know, even some of the modern day guys in the roster. There's a lot of footage that normally would be left on the cutting room floor that we are exposed to here in the special. I love seeing stuff like that. So that's always, you know, very cool to me. But to me, this is the kind of content that makes the network worth the price tag. You know, for the people that actually pay $9.99 a month for it, this is the kind of content that, as a paying subscriber, I love to see. And I'd like to see them produce more of. So I want to just take you through not every single, you know, scene in the episode, but, you know, just some of the key scenes. Just kind of take you along, although I recommend everybody go off and watch it on your own. But I wanted to just go through this here because I just really enjoyed it, and I think you will too. But they have a graphic on the screen at the very beginning letting everybody know that The Undertaker, 3 days before WrestleMania, I was going to say 17, WrestleMania 33, called up Vince McMahon. Probably called up Vince McMahon figuring that this probably was going to be his final match. And he wanted to document it. For the first time in his life, he wanted to document his career. He made the call to Vince McMahon, and he had a camera crew, I think the next day, there to follow him along from the airport to the hotel, and all of the preparation that went into what he believed was going to be his final weekend as an active professional wrestler. And so that's how this whole series came about. And they alternate between clips of him that have been shot over the last 3 years, at the various events in the gym, and also at home. You know, just sitting at home, kind of reminiscing and thinking back on his career, reflecting back on his career. He tells us, you know, obviously he doesn't share a lot of personal things, but, you know, he's sitting there and he's very honest. He's thinking to himself, what happened? What happened to me? I'll tell you what happened to you, Mother Nature. Mother Nature's a bitch. Mother Nature, Father Time, they could do a number on you. And they've done a number on The Undertaker over the years. But he wanted to know, he said, you know, I used to be this tough SOB, and I'm at a point in my career where now I'm not sure if I can keep up anymore with the young guys. Maybe my time has come and gone. Maybe I can't do this anymore. You know, he's just being honest. He's saying out loud what I have said and what a lot of fans have said over the years. When you watch The Undertaker, you can watch a really good Undertaker match and say, man, he looks like he's turned back the hands of time. He looked as good as he looked 10 years ago. More often than not, you watch an Undertaker match and you just kind of wince. And you think to yourself, this is sad. This is sad to watch. Now he just, certain people just, it feels like they can't let go. They can't let go of that former glory, or they just enjoy it and have so much fun. It's just they can't say when enough is enough. And other people have so much respect for the guy, and he said this on the interview with Steve Austin, nobody else is going to tell me when my career is over. That's a decision that I'm going to make. Nobody else, no fans, nobody is going to dictate when I'm done. And I respect that, but the fans are going to watch these matches year after year, and they're going to comment like they would any other match, and you have a lot of Undertaker fans out there probably watching who think, hey, as long as he makes an entrance and he chokeslams somebody, that's all I need. And then you have the other people who are going to watch and go, I don't want to remember this guy for looking down, looking like a broken shell of what he used to be. It's kind of sad. So here he's kind of stuck in that moment. You know, he realizes, look, I don't want to be that guy, but I still feel like I can do this. And that's kind of the theme of the whole episode. They did talk about the early days of the character, you know, the debut at Survivor Series in 1990. A lot of talking heads in this episode. Steve Austin, Triple H, Mick Foley, Big Show, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, AJ Styles, Edge, Scott Hall, Bray Wyatt, you know, obviously Michelle McCool, Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, Michael Cole, Chris Jericho. A lot of big names, a lot of people they interviewed. I mean, look, they filmed this over the course of 3 years. There's probably a lot more interviews in these next four episodes that we haven't even seen yet. So they got a nice mix of people. And Ric Flair made the comment, in his opinion, he didn't say best wrestler, but Ric Flair said the greatest character or gimmick in the history of professional wrestling. And I defy anybody to find me another one that's better or more iconic or that has gone on to be as successful and made as much money as that Undertaker character. You know, he wasn't out there as Mark Calloway. He played this character, this undead zombie character called The Undertaker for, you know, 30 years. Find me another gimmick in WWE or any other promotion. A character like this that somebody has portrayed that has had the longevity that he has had, made the most, you know, made as much money for the company he worked for as he has. You know, Kane is right behind him. Kane may be number two. That's a whole other story. It's amazing the career that Kane has had as really a supporting character. He only debuted as the brother of The Undertaker. And I think most people, maybe Kane himself, probably figure, well, when this feud runs its course, who knows? You know, maybe on to the next gimmick. He was already a dentist. He's a fake diesel. Kane has gone on to have an incredible career himself. But I cannot argue with Flair. I mean, I don't think it's up for debate that The Undertaker character is the greatest creation that Vince McMahon has to his credit over the years. Bar none, no doubt about it. He mentions the eye roll that's part of his gimmick and how it came to be in a match. He just kind of did it in a match with Greg the Hammer Valentine. I was a little curious. He said everybody in the back was going nuts. They said, oh, keep doing it, keep doing it. And I'm pretty sure, you know, in searching around, it was a match that he and Valentine had on Primetime Wrestling in 1991, October of 91, or at least that's when it aired. Pretty sure that might be the match where he debuted the eye roll for the first time. I mean, if he's talking about people in the back freaking out, then it had to be a TV taping, because otherwise, how would they know? If he's in the ring at a live event somewhere in some random city, rolling his eyes back in his head, who's going to know? So anyway, that might be the match. He talked about how the streak, the WrestleMania streak, made it possible for him to only have to come back and wrestle once a year. You know, because he was at a point in recent years, he couldn't really do much more than that. You know, they would bring him out for a Survivor Series here and there, or a SummerSlam here and there, maybe a Royal Rumble cameo. But by and large, I mean, he's really wrestled one match a year now for the last, what, 5-7 years? I mean, probably, you know, about that long. And he actually said, you know, it became a situation where he would have these nagging injuries, or he would need surgery, or he would need a hip operation. But he would go into training for the one match at WrestleMania, he would have his WrestleMania match, and then he would have surgery for whatever the nagging injury was, and then go right back into training a few months later for the next year's WrestleMania match. And this, you know, for a while there was the pattern for The Undertaker. He would have the one match, he would be all beat up, and then they'd have to kind of put the pieces of The Undertaker back together again. And he would go right back into training for whoever his opponent was going to be at WrestleMania the following year. But he had a lot of, you know, clearly, you just look at the guy, look at the way he limps around, you could tell, you know, he's beat up. You could tell that his body is absolutely thrashed. Now, this guy is 6'10", 328, whatever they build him as all these years, a big guy. And, you know, the first thing to go on a lot of these big guys you hear about usually are the knees. And this guy was doing dives in his matches up until 2011. Might have been the last time I saw Undertaker do a dive out over the top rope in a match, was the WrestleMania match with Triple H. And he was still doing dives out to the floor. Almost killed himself against Shawn Michaels in WrestleMania 25. But he kept doing it, you know. He was doing things for a guy his size, at his age, with his body in the state that it was in, that he should not have been doing. But he felt that that was part of who he was, and that was just something that he felt he had to do. He did talk about the streak ending at WrestleMania 30. They didn't go into as much detail as I would have liked. Maybe they still will, as far as whose decision was that. Vince McMahon, ultimately, Steve Austin cornered Vince McMahon in his interview with him a few years ago and said, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that was Mark's idea? And then Vince said, no, it was my idea. But I would have liked to have heard more from Undertaker, since he is kind of opening up about the conversations that went into that. My understanding is it wasn't something that he really wanted to do. He had to be talked into it. Maybe that's false. Maybe he was totally on board with the idea from the moment Vince brought it up. He never really gets into that, at least on this episode. He never gets into, you know, did he have to be convinced? Was he having doubts about it? Because that to me would have been interesting to know about. He doesn't remember the match at all. Of course, he got hurt. He got concussed very badly in that match. Has no recollection of the match whatsoever. He's not sure where he got concussed. Talked about how his memory that day only goes back to about 3:30 in the afternoon. And he told this to Steve Austin and picks up with it at 5:30 in the morning. He's in the hospital. So from 3:30 in the afternoon to 5:30 in the morning, he has no memory of what happened, you know, and he's gone back and watched the match. He has no idea where the injury happened. They did show one spot early in the match where he's outside the ring and there's almost like a leg trip or something happened and he fell backwards on the floor and smacked his head. But he's not sure. You know, he admits, he goes, I'm not sure exactly where the concussion happened, but it's clearly a horrible concussion if he has no memory of what happened. And it's always fascinating to me to hear these stories about people who suffer really bad concussions and their body just goes on autopilot. So he worked the rest of that match. He knew all of his spots and all of that. You know, he knew when not to kick out. Like, he knew his brain was functioning in that moment, but his brain was so traumatized that he just has no memory of what happened. And it's scary to think about. I mean, you know, it was not the best match of his career. In fact, I would argue it was one of the worst. But it is going to go down as one of the most famous matches in wrestling history. It will go down as probably the biggest match of his career. Just for what that finish represented, you know, the reaction from the fans. He may not remember any of it, but I do. I was in the building that night. And I've been to a lot of shows. I'm sure a lot of you have been to a lot of shows before. Maybe even WrestleManias. And I can't remember being there live for a match that when the referee hit three, there was all this mass confusion and the bell rang. And I remember I looked around. I looked at the row behind me. I looked at the section over because I wasn't sure. I mean, my first thought was the referee messed up. And oh boy, because what a spot to mess up if you're that referee. I think it might have been Chad Patton. Was I don't remember who it was, but that was my first thought, that there was a screw-up. They didn't play Brock's music at first. I didn't know what happened. Then reality sank in when they put the graphic up that said 21-1. You know, they had that graphic ready to go. And all of a sudden, everybody realized what had happened, and the boos and the BS chants just rained down upon the Superdome. You know, I laughed, because that was my reaction once I realized what happened. I just laughed, you know? You see me on camera when they cut to me, I'm laughing because I don't even know just the idea that they would even think about ending the streak was so preposterous to me. I disagreed with that decision then. I still do. I still wouldn't have done that. But to be there live, I don't think there'll ever be another match certainly in WWE history, with that kind of finish that elicits that kind of genuine shock. You know, genuine shock and awe at that finish. I mean, they took the air right out of that building. And it did not come back until the final minutes of the Daniel Bryan match in the main event. The women that came on right after, I think that the match that AJ Lee won, they had no chance. The women in that next match had absolutely no chance. And the main event was dying a death too, but people like Daniel Bryan so much, at least he got them back into it. But there'll never be another moment like that. They show him collapsing in the back, or at least you see Vince McMahon rush out, he's yelling for help. You don't actually see him collapse, but he fell down when he got to the back, and the trainer, they interviewed the trainer, and the trainer could tell right away. He's talking, Undertaker's smiling. He's got this dazed look in his eye. He knew something was wrong. And so they got him in an ambulance. They were sending him off to the ER. And as they're on their way to the hospital, or a local medical facility, I'm sorry, they notice that there's this car. There's an SUV following them, you know, riding right behind them. And it turns out that it was Vince McMahon, which, you know, we had heard the story that Vince left the show. He left WrestleMania. He did not see Daniel Bryan win the championship. But I didn't know Brock Lesnar was with him. So apparently Vince got out of the car, Brock Lesnar got out of the car, and they went to the hospital to make sure that everything was okay with The Undertaker. Didn't even know his own name. His wife said he was trying to cheat, hey, what's my name, when they would ask him questions. Didn't know his name, didn't know where he was. Kind of reminds me, Bubba Ray Dudley has told the story, just again to illustrate how scary concussions can be. TLC 4. On Raw back in October of 2002, that was the match, I think Kane, who was Kane's part? Was it RVD? Whoever, I think it was Kane and RVD. They won. Then Triple H came out and we got the first Katie Vick mention. But in that TLC match, Bubba took a bump off one of the ladders and he landed, I think, head first or face first. He just crashed. And I think Tommy Dreamer has told the story that Bubba didn't know where he was. I think they took him to the hospital. And it was so bad that he just kept asking, I want to see my mother. I want to see my mother. Just go get my mother. And his mother had passed away. His mother was dead. And so when they told him, he started bawling his eyes out. Because to him, it was like the first time that he had heard that his mother was dead. And then a few minutes later, he calls over Dreamer. He's like, Go get my mother. I need to talk to my mother. And they had to tell him all over again. Imagine that. I mean, it's horrifying. That's hard. That's like the worst news you could get. And they had to keep telling him over and over because he just kept forgetting. It was like his brain would reset every few minutes. So that's just another one of those stories that put your hands up. You take a chair shot or something, put your hands up. Make sure you protect yourself. He said that one concussion destroyed his confidence. We've heard similar stories from Ric Flair. He even talked about Flair when Flair came back, worked with Undertaker at WrestleMania 18. Undertaker couldn't believe it. Like, when the match was over, Flair was in tears. He was so emotional. He was, thank you so much. And he didn't understand it. He goes, you're Ric Flair. What are you talking about? What are you, confidence issues? It makes no sense. And he said now he started to understand it. You know, because he just felt, do I belong here? Should I be, can I do this? Maybe I can't do this anymore. Am I embarrassing myself when I go out there? So it's the first time you've really heard him open up about these types of issues before. And they show him kneeling down before his match with Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 31 in the gorilla position. And you see Triple H come over. And he says, Triple H just said to him, you know, you're the motherfucking Undertaker. You know, he had to kind of remind him. He said, don't forget who you are. And he said that helped a lot. That little pep talk from Triple H helped him a lot. And he went out there and he had a very good match. As compared to the match he had the year before, it was like night and day. He and Bray, it was a good match, but it was a much better showing for The Undertaker in 2015 than he had in 2014. He had the new short haircut, but he looked renewed. He was moving around a lot better, probably largely because he didn't have a concussion this time. But he felt a lot better. He had gotten his confidence back. Royal Rumble 2017. Undertaker was in that Royal Rumble match. I believe that was the one that was at the Alamo Dome. So they had a big crowd, 50,000 people there. And he knew. He was in the match and he said, it was almost like this eureka moment where it was like, oh shit. He goes, why am I here? He was moving around horribly. He looked terrible in that match. He looked old. He looked like Father Time had finally caught up with him and he realized he was in the ring. And he said, I don't belong here. What am I doing here? He saw Roman Reigns came out. He felt bad because he knew this was to set up the match at WrestleMania. And he knew he had no business being in that ring. He was so beat up. He had a hip problem. He knew he had no business being in there. But they were already shooting the angle. There was nothing that could be done. You know, they're already on their way. And he made the comment, he said it really would kill him to know that you have a dad who's at the show with his son, watching The Undertaker, and then turning to his son and going, hey, you know, this guy here, you should have seen him 10 years ago. Or you should have seen him 15 years ago. And he did not want to be that guy. He did not want to get to that point. Now, I think back to the Landsberg interview in 2002 about him saying the same exact thing all these years earlier, almost 20 years earlier. He was making the same comments in the Michael Landsberg interview about not wanting to be that guy that fans look at and go, oh, you should have seen him 10 years ago. Almost the exact quote is what he said in that interview with Landsberg. And I think back to that. And Landsberg had mentioned, you know, when Undertaker said that, he'd go, it kind of sounds like the guy you're describing there is Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan had just come back. He was having the match at Rock at WrestleMania that year. One of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history. And Undertaker made the comment. He was trying to be diplomatic about it. He was saying, well, you know, Hogan. And he just said, I would hope that when I'm at that age, I just think that I would want to be doing something different with my life. So I went back and I checked. And Hulk Hogan, you know, when that interview happened and Undertaker said that, Hulk Hogan was 49 years old. Undertaker right now is 55 years old. Which just goes to show, you know, Cody Rhodes was in the news recently about wanting to retire in 5 years. I guess he's going to turn 40. I've heard Booker T one time said the same thing. When I'm 40 or 40 whatever years old, I'm not going to be. Every wrestler says that. Oh, when I get to 40 or when I get to 50, I can't imagine I'm going to be doing this anymore. And I mean, find me five examples of anybody with like a big name who actually went on to live up to those words and didn't wrestle again. I would have put Shawn Michaels in that category, and now I can't because he came back and did the Saudi Arabia match. But at least Shawn Michaels, for the most part, he did stick to his guns. Steve Austin, he hasn't come back. But those weren't guys that I think actively said, hey, when I turn this age, I'm done. My career is over. I don't even know why wrestlers bother saying that, because you know you're going to come back. Why even say it? I mean, think about what it is that you do, right? It's a performance. You're not in an actual athletic competition where, you know, the stakes are high, you're competing in the Olympics or something. Smoke and mirrors. You get to a certain age, if you're in relatively okay shape, you can always do like a big match or like one big retirement match and get a big payday out of it. Why would wrestlers even go out there and say, when I turn this number, I'm not going to wrestle anymore? But it made me think of that. It made me think of Undertaker saying, oh, you know, well, Hogan's age, when I get to that age, I'm going to be doing something else with my life. It's not how it works. It's not very many wrestlers who can say they stuck to their guns on that. So we get to WrestleMania weekend. It's the Hall of Fame ceremony. This was some of the best stuff on the entire special that I enjoyed. They had a lot of rare footage and rare clips of him backstage hobnobbing with people. We got to see a handshake with Undertaker and Bruno Sammartino. And we talk about two legends coming together. Bruno, oh, hey, how are you? Of course, Bruno has since passed away. But we saw him back there with Kurt Angle, and they're swapping war stories together. He's teasing Kurt Angle about the first time he ever, I think he ever went to throw a chop or do something, throw a punch maybe. Throw a punch. And he says, Kurt kind of, it's like he seized up, like he clenched, like he was kind of bracing himself for it. And he still gives him shit about that to this day, and so they were joking about that. But that just goes to show you, that's one of those things. Like, Undertaker still remembers the first match that he had with Kurt Angle on the first punch, you know, that he went to go throw at the guy. And I'll go hear a Ric Flair interview, and, you know, Flair, actually the one he did with Steve Austin recently was pretty good. He does remember a lot of stuff, but, you know, some of these guys, Ric Flair is probably a bad example anyway, given, you know, all of his extracurricular activities. I'm surprised Flair even has a functioning liver at this point. The fact that he can remember anything is probably a good sign. So anyway, you see him just kind of meeting with everybody, and they even showed some footage from some outtakes or just stuff that wasn't filmed from like a backstage segment on SmackDown in 2001 or 2002, where he and Kurt are just sitting on a couch getting ready for their pre-tape. And, you know, he's just kind of joking with Kurt. I think you might do all right. I think you might make it in this business. And they're just kind of laughing and stuff. That's the kind of stuff I want them to show more of. I want more of that rare footage that we've never seen before. JBL was interviewed as well. And JBL talked about the first match they had together was the night after WrestleMania 12 on Raw. It was Justin Hawk Bradshaw against The Undertaker. And Undertaker, you know, he says matches like that can make or break you. I was a new guy at the time, and you know, if Undertaker didn't like me, then that would have been the end of me. So that Undertaker went to the back, and he was smiling. He was so happy about the match that we had. That was important for his career. You know, and he talked about how he feels Undertaker is the greatest performer in the history of the business. Of course, you'll get different answers from different people. Some people say Flair. Some people say Shawn Michaels. Some people, you know, they might have a Japanese legend or, you know, Hogan or Austin. A newer fan might say Cena. It's all a matter of perspective. It's all a matter, I think, of the generation and the era that you grew up in. That is a debate that will be raging for the rest of time. Everybody has their Mount Rushmore. You know, is The Undertaker on your Mount Rushmore? I don't think he's on mine, but I respect his body of work. I mean, there's been very few people that have had the longevity that he's had, been in the ring with all the big names that he's been in the ring with, and has all these different iconic moments and comebacks. But I don't know that he would be on mine. He might be on some of yours. But he did say that he's never seen Undertaker physically as bad as he saw him before the match with Reigns at WrestleMania 33. He was hurting. You know, physically, he was in very bad shape. They did show him and Roman meeting at the backstage at the Hall of Fame. He met Roman's wife, and they were just kind of sitting around, and he was telling him stories, and, oh, back at WrestleMania 17, and He just seemed like the old guy who was happy to be there and tell old stories. Yeah, that's going to be the next phase of the Undertaker's life. They showed the dress rehearsals and the entrance rehearsals for WrestleMania and Undertaker, you know, the platform that he was going to rise from and be lowered from. So that was cool. We get to WrestleMania morning, WrestleMania 33. And he wants people to, when they leave the stadium, he wants them to be talking about his match. He wants his match to be the best thing and the most important thing on the entire show. It's very important to him. He wants people, when they leave, to feel like they got their money's worth. So that's all that's on his mind going into this match. And he has a great line here. He says, you know, there's an old line about boxers, where fighters can get old in one fight. It's all it takes. One fight, and a fighter can get old. And I was like, well, if only he knew what was coming up that night. If only he knew what was coming up that night. He met with Goldberg. He saw Goldberg backstage. Goldberg was defending the world Universal title against Brock Lesnar that night. They shared a hug. Of course, Goldberg almost killed The Undertaker in Saudi Arabia. Which, from the clips they show, they are going to cover that. That is going to be covered as part of this documentary series. And Chris Jericho was there. You know, he saw the camera crew. He said, what is this? You know, is this it? Is this the end? He kind of got the sense that maybe they were filming for the end of his career. And Undertaker is telling Jericho, oh, yeah, you know, the aisle's like 80 yards. I was at Camping World Stadium. I have to say, first of all, that is the longest freaking ramp I've ever seen in my life. And I knew right away. I said, there's no way The Undertaker is starting from the beginning of that ramp, walking all the way down to the ring. We'll be here for an hour just waiting for that. And of course, he didn't. He rose up from the middle, which was smart. That stage with the giant globe and everything, I think they spent $5 million to design that set. Easily the greatest WrestleMania set. The most elaborate of any that they've ever done. I mean, just being able to see it in person, it was beautiful. So that's still my favorite one. That was at Camping World Stadium. He took us through the process of everything that's involved in him getting ready for a match, which is tough to watch. You know, you look at him, he's moving around like an old man. He's getting injections in his knee. You know, they're shooting needles into him to make sure that, you know, the cartilage and everything, it feels pretty good. It's a whole process, you know, that he has to go through to get ready for a big match like that at this stage of his career. And Roman Reigns is interviewed, and he talked about the pressure that's on him, understanding that this could be it for The Undertaker. He wants, if this is going to be his last ride, you know, he wants to make sure that he goes out with a good match. So the one thing that we learned from this, I mean, really, from the moment the episode began, is that this was going to be his final match. The belief by Undertaker, his wife, Roman Reigns, probably Vince McMahon, everybody involved, is that this was going to be it. You know, the fans didn't know that for sure going in, but this was going to be it for The Undertaker. This was going to be the end. And they all believed that going in. Of course, you know, based on the post-match stuff, it seemed pretty obvious that that was going to be the end, and then it wasn't. So, you know, they talk more about the injuries, and Big Show talks about Undertaker wrestling with 103-degree fever, getting IV fluids. He talked about liquids coming out of both ends, and then he would go out to the ring, and then... that's not a visual that I needed. Liquids coming out of both ends of the Undertaker, but, you know, hey, it happened to the best of us, I guess. Michelle talked about the pyro accident. Remember Elimination Chamber back in 2010? Was it 2000? I think it was 2010. And they showed the incident as the pyro is going off when he's making his entrance. He got burned. Got second degree burns. The pyro guy screwed up. You see Undertaker just threw his jacket off. He's having bottles of water fed to him inside the pod because now he's got to stand in the Elimination Chamber pod. He's got second degree burns all over his body, his shoulders. He's no-selling it. I don't think that pyro guy lasted much longer after that. Come to think of it, I don't think he was ever heard from again. I'm sure Undertaker was not very happy when he got to the back. Mick Foley talked about their Hell in a Cell match in 98, you know, how Mankind went out worse than he did coming in. But coming in, Undertaker had, I think, a broken foot or some kind of foot injury. which is crazy because remember, he came down from the top of the cell after Mick got chokeslammed through. Undertaker's a big guy. Hell in a Cell wasn't as tall as it is today. I don't know why they make it so freaking tall today, but he jumped down. He was hanging down and landed right on that ankle, and you could see he was not feeling too good himself. So he's a tough guy. He's had a lot of injuries and ailments over the years. I mean, Mabel sat on his face, and that's not meant to be in a sexual way, but he landed on his face, and he broke an orbital bone, I think, and he wore a Phantom of the Opera mask, and he went back to work. You know, I mean, these days they might not even let somebody with an orbital injury wrestle, even if they wanted to, but back then he's like, here, give me a mask. You know, he was wearing masks before all of us were. He went right back to work, and he wrestled with that mask for a few months. They showed highlights from the match at WrestleMania with Roman Reigns, and they did their best to make it look like a halfway decent match or a good match. It was not. This was a great editing job by WWE. The match sucked. The match was no good. It was a bad match that he had at WrestleMania with Roman Reigns. It was not worthy of what you would expect to see in a WrestleMania main event. I'm sure they were disappointed. I mean, you listen to Undertaker talk about it. I'm sure he wasn't happy with his performance that night. Plain and simple, it was a bad match. But they did not cut the botch towards the end, which was the double tombstone reversal attempt botch where Roman Reigns was going to, you know, pick him up for the tombstone. Undertaker couldn't kind of get himself up, and then he tried again and it didn't work, and it was sad. You know, it was sad to see. And then they just went right to the finish where Reigns came off the ropes and speared him. They were chanting for the Undertaker. I think by the time the match was over, people kind of had a sense that this could potentially be it for him. When he took the gloves off and he put the jacket down, he took the hat off, he put the hat down on top of the jacket, then people knew. And they showed highlights here. People were openly crying in the stadium. You know, where we were sitting in our section, I was looking, you know, there were people behind me who were tears running down their face. People all over the place, you know, had this look like they had just witnessed a death on TV. And what they had witnessed was the death of the Undertaker's career. But I think people knew, okay, This is something special. Look, even I was emotional. Now, that may have been more so because I was sitting in that stadium for 7.5 hours. And it was after midnight. It was 12:15 a.m. when all of this was going on. I was very emotional. But no, I mean, look, it was an emotional moment. You're witnessing what you think is the end of this unbelievable career. You know, you get to be there live in person for this guy's last match. I thought the way that they handled it, you know, so he puts all of his gear down in the ring, he goes outside, he kisses his wife, and goes halfway up the ramp, and then just plume of smoke disappears down into the depths of hell, the bells toll, the lights go out. As far as picturing what the final scene would be of The Undertaker's career, you could not get any better than that. Couldn't do any better than that. You know, he goes out and disappears into a plume of smoke, never to be seen again. You see Mark Calloway, but you wouldn't see The Undertaker ever again. Would have been the perfect ending. Would have been the perfect ending to his career. And then, of course, he came back the following year, and it was all for nothing. But I digress. They showed Undertaker when he was being lowered down under the ramp. Triple H was the first person there to greet him, give him a big hug, said it's been a hell of a career. So, you know, he also figured it was probably the end for him. You know, his wife was talking about how it just kind of feels like this is really the end, you know, finally, after all these years, this really is the end. And then off he went. They showed Vince, you know, finding him in the trainer's room and thanking him for the match. The preview for episode 2 shows him at home watching video of the match back at WrestleMania and the spot, you know, the double tombstone botch and everything. And he just, you know, he kind of winces. He's disgusted by it. Clearly, he's not happy with the match that he had with Roman Reigns. He realizes it was a bad match. You know, that was not the way that he wanted to go out. It was a bad match that they had. And now he's got to get healthy again so he can get redemption and come back and have a good match. And so that's how they end the episode. And as far as that goes, I'll say this. This November marks 30 years since The Undertaker made his debut at the Survivor Series in 1990. He came out, he was the Million Dollar Man's Mystery Man, and out he came with Brother Love. And they show people in the crowd stunned. They were shook by what they were seeing here with The Undertaker. They didn't know what to make of this guy. And he went on to have this fabulous career, but it's going to be 30 years in November. To the very event where he made his debut. And I don't know, the pay-per-view was being rumored for Dallas. Obviously, with everything going on now, I don't know where it's going to be. But it was supposed to be in Texas, which is where he's from. So the stars seem to be aligning if he was going to have one last match. I know some people think, oh, he can only have his last match at WrestleMania. I don't believe so. If the streak was still intact, then absolutely. His last match should have been at WrestleMania. Without the streak, his match doesn't have to be at WrestleMania. Survivor Series is where he made his debut. If he's going to have one final match, do it at Survivor Series. Full circle, 30 years later. But, so I've been saying that. I watched this episode, and we've got four more left. And now I'm thinking to myself, what exactly, why now? That's the question that I want to know. Why now? Why did they film from 2017 to 2020? Why is this airing now? Is there a reason for that? And it makes me wonder if when we get to episode 5, when we get to the end of the series, is it going to be a case where he's going to announce that he is officially done? That he is officially retired? That the Boneyard match, AJ Styles at WrestleMania 36, was his swan song? And the more I think about that, because really, Undertaker should not be in the ring anymore. As much as I think it would be perfect for him to end at Survivor Series, the Undertaker should not be in the ring anymore. He should not be in the ring. His decision, obviously, it's his career, it's his life, but as a fan, I watch him. He's got nothing left to prove. He got very lucky this year. Things worked out the way they did, and he and AJ were able to have the kind of cinematic match that could have masked a lot of his weaknesses, that could have masked, you know, a lot of what probably would have been very glaring if they had just gone out there and had a regular wrestling match. Undertaker said as much. He did an interview a few weeks ago. He said he got really lucky the way things worked out at WrestleMania this year. This might be a good time for him to call it quits. This might be a good time for him to say, you know what? I just had the best match at WrestleMania. I got on my motorcycle. I rode off. I'm done. I'm happy. I'm satisfied. I'm not going to have a better match than that. Realistically, he probably won't. I'm done. So that's going to be something to watch for as we get to the end of this series in a few weeks. Is this building to the announcement that Undertaker is officially hereby retired? Or is it going to be, well, you never know. You know, you never know when the last ride might be. And then they build to something, you know, Survivor Series or next year. Feels to me like this might be a good time for him to just call it quits. That's kind of what it feels like to me. And if he does, again, he went out on a high note. Because I thought that match was fantastic. At WrestleMania with him and AJ. I thought they did a great job with it. Make sure you watch this for yourself. I thought this was excellent, and it's great that you chose to listen to me to get my thoughts on this, but this is one of those times where you really got to go and watch it for yourself. Now, I would never tell you to do that for Monday Night Raw. I would never say, oh, you can listen to me talk about Raw, but go ahead and watch Raw. I would never do that to you, so you don't have to worry about that. I will watch Raw so you don't have to, but make sure you watch this. I really do think we're only one episode in. I think this is going to end up being the best documentary series of any kind that WWE has ever done. I mean, this is really, as a longtime fan, it's a real treat to be able to see some of the footage that we are seeing here and get the kind of insight into his career that we're getting here in this special. It's really good stuff. I will see you guys for the sound off on Sunday. Take care, guys.